welcome back to another week of Behind the Lens. I'm Debbie Elias, film critic, creator, and host of Behind the Lens, where we go behind the lens and below the line with those movers and shakers, those film and TV makers, those producers, directors, writers, actors, cinematographers, costume designers, production designers, film editors, sound editors, sound mixers, composers, authors, VFX gurus, you name it, we talk to them. And as you can tell by my voice, I've been doing a lot of talking in addition to what they think is a problem due to all the mold in my house after being flooded with mold growing in it. So it's Pam's sitting in the booth laughing. She wasn't there helping bail water out of the house. So I apologize for the frog. But hopefully I'll get through the show. We'll be okay. Interesting show today. Interesting show. Very excited with our live guest who'll be joining us at the midpoint of the show. And that is Damien Hurley. If the name sounds a little familiar, it's because you might know him as a model, as an actor, and also as the son of Elizabeth Hurley. Damien has just written and directed his first feature film called Strictly Confidential. It was released on Friday. It is out now on VOD, digital platforms. I'm not sure if it's in theaters. I did not check this morning. I didn't double check that. So I will before we get Damien. Plus, he should be able to tell us. It's a beautifully shot film. It's an interesting film because Damien, at the time he made the film, I think was only 20 years old, maybe 21 years old. Shot in St. Kitts and Nevis, which, of course, you've heard me talk about St. Kitts and Nevis quite a few times with films that have been shot there. Films that Philippe Martinez has been producing. Philippe is a sweetheart. You've heard my exclusive interviews with Philippe on the show over the past 6 years after he started setting up production in the Caribbean on St. Kitts and Nevis and establishing film crews and with the residents of the islands. And the films that have come out of there under his guiding production eye. Sean Piccinino did a film down there. Philippe himself directed 3 or 4 films already. I think this is the 3rd film Elizabeth Hurley has been in that has been shot down there. The prior 2 directed by Philippe. This one now directed by her son. It's a beautiful location, and it really provides a lot of ambience to a film. And that's something that works so beautifully in Damien's film, Strictly Confidential. It's kind of a whodunit. It's a mystery. And something that's really interesting is the fact that we have a 21-year-old writer-director who has written a film for 21-year-olds, 22-year-olds, with their vernacular, their attitudes, their social mores, their lifestyle. So it's really interesting, and you feel the resonance and believability of it. So I cannot wait to talk with Damien about this film and the benefits of shooting in St. Kitts and Nevis, as well as having Philippe and his mother as producers. And, of course, Elizabeth is also in the film. But first, a film that also just came out called The Listener. It is directed by Steve Buscemi, written by Alessandro Camon, produced by Oren Moverman. And you all know my respect and admiration for Oren. as a filmmaker, as a producer. And Oren was the director of The Messenger. Alessandro wrote the script for The Messenger back in 2009. But Alessandro is now back with us writing the screenplay for The Listener. And it is a perfectly timed movie right now. Because this is, what are the months here? This is April, Sexual Awareness, Sexual Assault Awareness and Prevention Month, May, Mental Health Awareness Month, and The Listener, as you can imagine, focuses on a listener, a woman on the end of a helpline, and we follow her with all the calls she takes over the course of a night. The caller, we never see the callers. The film is self-contained in her apartment. The woman is played by Tessa Thompson, who is amazing in the role. Very in control, very sympathetic, empathetic. She is an excellent listener in The Listener, as she deals with a multiplicity of callers. Among them, an ex-con, a woman with a special needs daughter, a teenager out on the streets, obviously a creepy, perverted guy. You always got to have one of them. A bipolar woman, a former Marine haunted by Afghanistan, an angry and bitter performer, a cop who pulled a George Floyd incident, a sociology professor. The film, and Steve as a director, navigates all of this exquisitely. Slow, it's well-paced, nothing is rushed. As Tessa Thompson's character of Beth, as she is speaking with them, she never rushes them. She never hurries them. If they need a pause, the pause is there while they collect themselves. And the interesting dynamic is what Steve does with the camera as it follows Beth through the apartment. And depending on the caller and what's being revealed, what's being said, we might have a light go on. The camera might go in closer on Beth if it's something that is personally touching her without any words expressing that. Alessandro spoke, as you're going to hear in a moment in our exclusive interview, spoke with many individuals to come up with composites for these callers. The talent that voices the callers, Logan Marshall Green, Derek Cecil, Margaret Cho, Blue Del Barrio, Ricky Velez, Alia Shawkat, Jamie Hector, Casey Wilson, Bobby Soto, and Rebecca Hall. As the callers, all they have is their voice to communicate with us. They are never on screen. It is an incredible character study. It is a showcase for Tessa Thompson. The film is moody and atmospheric. And beautifully, Alessandro was on set for this, for the filming experience as well. So take a listen as Alessandro, come on, goes in depth talking about the creation of and writing of The Listener.
Well, hello, Alessandro. How are you?
I'm all right, thank you.
It has been a very, very, very long time since we spoke for The Messenger.
Oh, goodness. Yes,
and here you are with Oren as a producer on this film.
I know. I came full circle. And Steve, he was in The Messenger.
Yes. I love Oren. I haven't seen him since before.
Everybody does.
I know. He's such a good director. He's such a good writer. He is a great producer because he has such a good eye. And for me, seeing that you and Oren were teamed up again, Steve was directing, this was a must-see movie for me with the listener.
But thank you. Yeah, I mean, it did turn out to be like a mini reunion of sorts because, obviously these three people being involved, but also, I don't know, I always felt that there was a continuity between the two films, thematically, in terms of the kind of movies that they are.
Yes.
It is small, of course, but it's, still a movie about people doing a job, a very specific job.
Mm-hmm. And what goes with that and the human nature of that job and what that entails. And that's something you do. This is a brilliant character study with the listener. The diversity of the callers who call this helpline and get Beth to speak with them. It's amazing. And the way you've structured this with these various call-in individuals, you build the tension for us as to... You know, we've got an ex-con, we've got someone with a special needs child, we've got a teenager, you've got the creepy perv guy. If you got to call in anything, you figure the creepy perv guy is going to be there. And you build this up, and then we get into the former Marine and a cop in a George Floyd situation, ultimately a sociology professor. But the human emotion and the intensity of each one of these callers, it just exponentially grows. And the entire time we hear Beth, very calm, very kind, very supportive, building to that third act. And it's fascinating. It is fascinating, Alessandro. Where did this story begin for you?
So, this is something I've always wanted to write about. I just, I am fascinated with this kind of work and this kind of interaction, both as a dramatist and, just as a person. I think it's... necessary work, it's undervalued work. We learn about its value during the pandemic, and we realize that these are actually essential workers, so the perspective has changed somewhat, but these are still by and large unsung heroes that I always wanted to write about. Only recently I realized that I could write about it in a way that was cinematic, because up until recently the job would be done in an office setting, right?
Mm-hmm.
So person would be sitting in a cubicle in front of a computer screen, and that's not a movie that I want to see personally. Right. Once people started doing the job from home, which was largely during the pandemic, I realized, oh, okay, so we can have a character that moves freely around the house or apartment, and that will tell us a lot about who she is. And we will see different rooms and different environments, and we'll be able to shift the lighting and the mood. So I realized, okay, now this can be a movie. I always wanted to write about it, but only recently I thought that it would be possible.
Mm-hmm.
And in terms of how I went about writing it, I can say And, you know, obviously I did a lot of research. I talked to people who work or work for helplines, and, you know, I read everything that I could find. But the people on the other side of the call, the people who call in, are all very, you know, they're very real because they're all based on people that I met, right? Specific portraits of specific individuals. Every character is a composite, but they're all based on people that I know.
The diversity of the people, of the callers, is really wonderful. And as you're listening, these are the kind of people that you would think would be calling in anonymously to talk with someone, to extend a hand, reach out for just conversation even. So I really love the characters that you, the composites you have created. They are all very engaging. And I know so much of that also goes to the voice performers who do a wonderful job with the emotional cadence and resonance and changing up each call. And this is a testament to Tessa, because we see her, the tone of her voice changes. If people listen closely, she may slow down her cadence a bit. She may even soften her voice depending on who that person is on the other end of the line. She's very intuitive into what might help these people. And it is just a testament to the structure, to the performances, and also to Steve's direction. You mentioned something very important, being able to see Beth as she walks around her own apartment. This is where Steve really shines, as in the third act, we finally see Beth turn on a brighter light in her apartment as she's speaking to one person in particular. And the tables turn a bit. And it's almost the light at the end of the tunnel for the issues at hand, for Beth herself. Really beautifully, beautifully executed and married together, Alessandro.
Well, yeah, thank you. I think, Steve did a tremendous job. I think Tessa's performance is phenomenal. This is actually a very difficult role.
Yeah.
Very difficult. Because not only you're on camera for 90 minutes, half of the time, or most of the time, maybe, you are actually just listening. You are reacting. So you don't even have dialogue to express the character. You have to do it just with expression. So, yeah, I think Tessa did something very, very impressive. And yeah, the whole movie, I love the movie. I think it turned out very, very truthful and hopefully affecting. But it was a gamble, you know. It's a difficult. It was a difficult film in the sense that it's so contained. It's like a dogma film, right? There is a set of restrictions that is very, very specific. So it's a minimalistic movie, but it's about a very, very big subject, right? It's about the global mental health crisis. In a way, I guess the ambition was to make a film that was about this big subject. It was about, America on the brink, right? And all the way people are mentally suffering. There are many ways, so you have to kind of portray that range. So it's a minimalistic movie about something very, very big. And that was, a heavy lift, for Steve to make it interesting and for Tessa to make it so engaging.
You cannot look away from her.
Right.
It's, you cannot look away from her. You really want, as she's talking to people or listening, and she's walking around or she's sitting down, the tiny little things that she's doing, but without creating noise to disrupt the flow of the conversation. It's really, I was riveted watching this. And by the same token, I was fascinated at this structure and how it's pulled off. I'm curious. And so much of that is the actual dialogue, what these callers are saying. How strictly did Steve stick to the scripting? Because these are such specific characters with specific issues and personal crises. Was there improvisation, or did everyone stick pretty much to the words you put on the page?
Yes, they all did. There was no, some lines, I'm sure, change here and there, but no, there was no improvisation in the conventional sense. But there was a lot of interpretation. Every caller, and then of course Tessa, really brought their own sensibility and their own understanding of the character, their own delivery, in ways that sometimes surprised me. Not everybody spoke with the same intonation, with the same cadence, with the same accents that I had envisioned. So I think actors brought a lot to it, and that was always the intention. You know, these kind of roles, I think, are very attractive to actors because they just allow them to go deep, right? And and to do something, to challenge themselves.
Mm-hmm. I just can only imagine. Were you sitting there? Were you on set while things were being recorded and while it was being filmed?
Yes, mostly I was. It was a short shoot, so yeah, I was mostly there.
Wow. I can just imagine being you sitting there and hearing your words brought to life with those individual notes that each actor brought. That had to be fantastic.
I have to say, they all did phenomenal jobs. I could mention all of them, but that take too much time. But, Rebecca in the last call just blew me away.
Oh my, yes, that just had me spellbound. The emotion. And it's finally when we really see some harder emotion come out of Beth as well. And it was really, really interesting. I am in love with that call. That and the Marine and the former Marine and his dream about a boot. That was so sad and chilling at the same time. Just job so well done on this one, Alessandro. Now, you're directing a film, are you not?
Yeah, there are a couple of films that I wrote, in the last year or so with the intention of directing them. The one that was announced that you might have read about is an adaptation of my play, Time Alone. I did this play a few years ago, and it's about solitary confinement. It was a two-character play, and Todd Black, producer, is attached to produce. We decided to turn it into a film, and we have Taraji P. Henson attached to it. So I'm hoping that we go.
That would be nice.
Yes.
Now, adapting your play for a film, what about taking the listener and adapting it for the stage? I can see this as a stage production.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. I would love to do that. In fact, you know, when I wrote it, when I started writing, I didn't know whether it was going to be a play or a screenplay. I knew it could go either way or both ways. The theaters were closed at that point, so that practically wasn't an option. Mm-hmm. And I decided, okay, let's write it as a screenplay. But it could definitely be a play as well. And the key difference, if and when we do the play, is going to be that we actually will see all the colors.
Mm-hmm.
We will see them, and I think possibly they will just, you know, stay on stage for the whole play.
I would love to see this.
It would be a different experience.
I would love to see this on stage. I really would, Alessandro. I think it would be just riveting for people on stage, is just as much as watching the film. Job, just so well done, Alessandro. Such a beautiful film. And I will probably watch it again in the not-too-distant future because it is so moving.
I'm so glad you like it. And, I mean, listen, I would say it does reward the multiple viewings because there is a lot going on in mm-hmm. the story, so I think you will enjoy it the second time as well.
Well, I loved it the first time. I'm sure I will probably love it more the second time.
There is, I mean, I do. I think I've seen it now, I don't know, maybe 10 times, and I'm not tired of it yet.
Oh, Alessandro, I can't thank you enough taking time to talk with me today about The Listener. This has been an absolute delight. And I hope I get to speak.
My pleasure.
I hope we get to speak again in the future and not wait as long as the time between the messenger and the listener.
Right? Yeah, I know. Well, hopefully soon.
Alessandro, thank you so much. And you have a wonderful rest of your day.
Thank you. You too. Bye.
And hopefully Pam's got me on air. She's trying to multitask here, answering a phone and ending on the board the interview with Alessandro. Am I live, Pam? Oh, she's just, her little fingers just move around. That was Alessandro Camone talking about The Listener. It really is a beautiful film. It is an emotionally powerful film. It truly is. It is a brilliant character study, and it is timed so perfectly for Mental Health Awareness Month in May and for Sexual Assault Awareness and Prevention, which is this month in April. Check it out. It's on Prime Video, Apple TV, Vudu, Google, YouTube, and VOD because it is on Spectrum Cable, so I know that. All right, now, I'm very excited to be switching gears here and welcome this incredibly talented young director, Damien Hurley. Welcome. Can you hear us, Damien? Uh-oh, did we lose Damien? Uh-oh, we seem to be having a technical glitch here. Are you there, Damien? I think I hear you breathing. Did you mute yourself, Damien? Because we can't hear you in the studio. Damien, if you can hear me, I think you muted yourself. Because I can tell somebody's on the end of the line. Yeah, I hear noise on your line. Did you hit mute? Damien? Okay. Oh. Oh, I don't know what. I don't know what Pam's doing. She's doing something. Hi, Damien, are
you? Hello.
Who do I have?
Guys, I can't hear you if you can hear me. I'm so sorry.
Oh, can you?
Grace, ready to talk.
And I gave you a great introduction and everything.
Oh, hang on, now I can hear you. Now I've got everything.
Yay!
The gods are on our side. Hi, thank you for having me. I'm so sorry.
Oh, no worries. I'm so happy to have you. Damien, you are just...
hang on, what have I missed being said about me? Now I can actually hear you. I'm so sorry.
Yes, well, now that you can hear and we can chat. No, I gave you a lovely introduction about... Talk about an incredible first directorial feature from a young director like yourself. This is Strictly Confidential. It is a beautiful film, number one. Number two, your character construction is so well done. I love the mystery aspect, a potential whodunit question comes into play. Is there a whodunit? You even have a couple MacGuffins thrown in here. And some of the most beautiful cinematography that you and George Burt have done. This is
music to my ears. You're my new favorite person alive. Thank you for every word you just said.
Damien, thank you for this film.
You know what? This film has been such a labor of love. You know, I came up with the idea when I was 17, and I've just been working so hard. You know, it's been 2 years of my life, almost nonstop. I just got back to the UK after we had our New York premiere, our LA New York press tour. I'm just firing up now to start planning for the UK release, which is next month. It's all really exciting.
Well, you should be so proud of yourself because
thank you so much.
This film, it is so cinematic. And for the story that you're telling, you have the most incredible elements. You give us a great languid feel. And again, the cinematography and some of this with the color grading in post-production, you keep things soft. So it's almost a haunting effect for a good portion of the film because of the uncertainty and the journey that we're going on with Mia and the loss of her best friend the year prior. These little touches and elements. And I'm so happy that for your first film, Philippe Martinez is one of your producers. I love Philippe dearly. I love his work. I've spoken with him on multiple occasions. And he has put together this whole film system in St. Kitts and Nevis. And
Philippe has always been such a supporter of mine. We met when I was 8, when he directed a movie starring my mother and Gerard Depardieu, and he's just been a fabulous supporter of mine ever since. He allowed me to I was the guinea pig for his production company's first ever short film. They've started this scheme where they give, you know, young filmmakers 2 or 3 days access to all the crew, to all the equipment, to make a short film. And it was just luck. You know, he called me and said, I know you've always been passionate about films and that you're going into filmmaking. Do you want to be my guinea pig to see if this, you know, young filmmaker scheme will work? And I said, of course, and it was my dream. And I made the short film. And it was just luck because that one executive at Lionsgate saw that short film. And we got a call just saying, we love this short. Do you have any scripts? We'd love you to make a feature for us. And that's how Strictly Confidential was born.
Oh, my gosh. But, you know, Philippe, he has everything there at your fingertips for you. And he has such a wealth of experience and information, as is this other producer you might have heard of, Elizabeth Hurley. You know, is also...
the name rings a bell.
Rings a bell is also...
I've got to say, you know, so it was so important to me that I, you know, as much as I love everyone who was involved in this, I was a first-time director. I was 20 years old. I was going to be standing there a good decade, two decades younger than everyone on set and be in charge of 100-plus cast and crew. I just wanted someone who was unequivocally Team Damien. No question of agendas, no question of anything other than total and utter support. And so I begged my mum to come on as creative producer after the film was greenlit, and she said absolutely, and she came on way before she was in the film, way before that was even discussed. And that really, I don't think I could have done it without her. Every single day, just to have a constant source of unwavering support and wisdom, you know, knowledge and so much experience that, mm-hmm. you know, as much enthusiasm and talent as one can have, I didn't have experience, you know, I was 20 years old. So that was really invaluable.
Now, an interesting question for you. Not too many people have been in this situation, but having your mom as a producer and also being in the film, was she wearing her producer's hat most of the time for you, or was the mom hat getting in there?
Well, it was so funny. I mean, we were both very multi-hyphenate on this. You know, mom was producer, actress, and worried mummy. I was, you know, writer, director, panicked first-timer, and child with her, you know, behind the scenes. We did have on the first day, we were laughing. I was saying, should I be calling you Elizabeth? Do I call you Mom? Do I call you nothing at all? Needless to say, I called her Mom within 2 seconds. But no, it was a really interesting time and such a strange dynamic. You know, the power balance between a director and actor can be complicated at the best of times. Factoring in you're a child bossing around your parent, you could have a recipe for disaster, but I've got to say it was seamless for us. It was amazing because we have this real twin-like telepathy. And so we just got on every step of the way. And I think also, you know, you have a shorthand with someone that you're close to and someone mm-hmm. that you love where you can cut out any semblance of faux politeness and trying to delicately step over something. And actually everything's just a bit faster. Rather than delicately saying, hey, what if we tried to do that? I can just say, oh, you missed your mark, go again. And to her, to me, when she was in producer mode, when there's no question of saying to a director, come on, time's up, we got to go. She could say it to me very nicely, very delicately, but not have to spend an hour saying it and fighting a frustrated creative.
And when you have to spend that lengthy amount of time on a low-budget, no-budget, micro-budget film, your time is money. Your time is precious. And
oh, God, yeah. Every second counts. Every minute matters. You're losing the light. You're finishing the day. You've got 50,000 pages to shoot that day. Also, in the Caribbean, of course, you're being dive-bombed by mosquitoes. You come to set one morning. This actually happened our first morning. We came onto set. I woke up, and I was so nervous. And that night before, and I just lulled myself into a calm and said, "It's going to be fine. You've got your alarm set for 4:30. Everything's going to be amazing." 4:29, my phone went off with a tornado alert, Our nice, beautiful opening day, which was meant to be a really gentle sea on the beach, was a literal grade 8 or whatever it is, code red tornado, hurricane, blizzard, waves. And we just had to rewrite it. You can't afford to take the day off and say, oh, we'll pick that day up another time. You don't have it.
Oh, my God. Yeah, well, you started off with a bang, Damien.
Well, I think, you know, I call it my baptism by fire. Mm-hmm. You know, I hope now, going forward, my next movie, it's a little, no movie's ever calm, but it's a little less intense.
Now, a curious thing for you, because you have done acting. I know you were in The Royals, several episodes of that. Did it help you? Don't laugh. Every job you get, as my father always told me, he spent 60 years in television broadcasting. And when I was doing production, I said, should I be worried about my name not on the credits or anything? He goes, number one, no matter what you do, no matter how small, no matter how big, is your name on the check? Is it spelled right? And did the check clear the bank? And that don't ever belittle yourself for anything. Those are the three things to worry about.
Thank you for that. I'm going to remember that.
So that has been my guiding principle for many, 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 many decades. But
I think that's a phenomenal thing. Yeah. All hail your dad.
So, but did you find in writing the script and also directing and working directly with the actors, did you find that the acting experience you have had, did that help you?
Yes, I think it does. I think having a background in, well, really more in film, but in acting too, you can read if a scene's going to play or not. You know, I've read scripts before where as good as a scene might be, it's actually just unplayable. It doesn't translate to a real-life human having to say those words on screen in a scene. And you can see it when an actor is very uncomfortable with having to say something that they know doesn't quite ring true. And so I really hope I got rid of as much of that as physically possible in this film.
Well, everybody looks totally at ease with their performance, but for when you give us all these twists and turns, all these secrets, and you can kind of look at everybody and know they've got a secret, she's got a secret, she's got a secret, he's got a secret. And I was just waiting. You really deliver. It's a slow burn pot boiler, but then you lace it with sensuality and seductiveness. And of course, secrets in themselves are always seductive, but you take it to the next level.
You're my favorite person alive. This is the nicest thing anyone's ever said to me. Thank you. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Yeah, but it was very important to me. It's interesting you say about people being beautiful because, A, I mean, yes, I do have an exceptionally beautiful cast shot in an exceptionally beautiful island, but I wanted people to find beautiful facades so that underneath everyone can feel the deep, dark secrets lurking through. It was really important to me that everything was glossy and beautiful so that when, oh my God, everything's appalling and dysfunctional under the surface, that comes as a shock. You know, if it was in a demented urban building falling down and police sirens going off, you might clue it a bit faster that it's about to go nasty. But I really love the contrast of beauty and horror. Not horror genre, you know, horrific things.
But it's the juxtaposition that works so well. And your actors really, you know, they'll give us a glance of, uh-oh, do they know what I did? Or, uh-oh.
I know, and but I've got to say, I got so lucky with all of these actors.
You
know, some I'd worked with before, with the wonderful Genevieve Gaunt, who plays Gemma, I worked with, funnily enough, on The Royals, and I met her, I think, first when I was 8. I remember being so impressed and so overwhelmed by her that I just said to her at the time, when I'm making real movies, I'm going to cast you. And she just sort of was very sweetly, oh, yes, of course you are, you know, patting me on the head, this 8-year-old child. And she was one of the first people I called as soon as this was greenlit. And I went, I've got a part for you. She was like, well, that's insane. You're 20 years old.
Oh.
But she came and she did it. And she was so phenomenal. You know, obviously my mom, Georgia Locke, who plays my lead, Mia. I couldn't have asked anyone better. I can't. You know, when you have a part, you suddenly can't imagine anyone else playing it. That really is Georgia for me. She just embodies the film. She is this film. You know, you're through her eyes for almost the entire movie.
You keep us in Mia's POV. The entire film. You know, we have a couple little dalliances on the side. Of course, there's a big dalliance involving your mother. I don't know how you filmed that.
You know, that particular, I mean, God, that was at the end of, it was towards the end of our shoot. At the end,
oh, thank
of,
God.
Actually, like the middle of a night shoot where we had, I think, 9 or possibly even 10 pages. It was one of our heaviest nights. So everyone always says, you know, oh my God, was it weird shooting that scene? And I've got to say, we didn't even register. We were, you know, losing the light. Every moment matters. Every second counts. Being dive bombed by mosquitoes. Probably started raining midway through. The last thing on our mind was anything other than just getting the scene, making it as beautiful as possible, and moving on to the next and making our day.
I have to tell you, that scene, it is beautiful. Of course, the gown that your mother is wearing certainly helps the beauty in it. That gold gown was gorgeous. Absolutely gorgeous.
Oh, wasn't that beautiful?
Oh.
Yeah, that was her own, actually.
Why am I not surprised? Why am I not surprised? But it fit her like a glove. It's beautiful. The slit up the side, it worked perfectly for the scene. But in the way that George slowly was moving the camera in, and then getting body parts, extreme close-ups. And then your editor, Frederick Fournier, then he cut this so exquisitely. So it is, it's sensual, it's seductive, but it's also tasteful.
Well, thank you. And I have to say, you know, Philippe was very kind during this whole process of letting me have full creative control. You know, there was no question of, on my first job as a kid, you know, being shoved to the sidelines and letting the grown-ups get on with it. You know, George, it's actually quite funny. George always laughs because apparently on this film, when he could just see I was just itching to move the camera, we had a code word, a covert sort of nod where he could go on. And I would say, to be honest, there's actually so many pictures of me behind the scenes manhandling the camera myself. George was so wonderful. You know, I think when someone really just allows a director to torture them into just every single shot that I wanted, it was an amazing, amazing experience working. And, you know, again, with the editing, you know, I had, and I was so grateful, the final say on every shot and cut every frame myself. And Lionsgate really was so nice not to, you know, they could have so easily taken it away and tortured me. And they didn't. And they were so kind and such wonderful people to work with and collaborate with.
Well, but one of the great joys and for you had to be the fact that George and Frederick, they do a lot of Philippe's films. They've done Week in Paradise, Christmas in the Caribbean, Christmas in Paradise.
Yeah, and I think, you know, they've worked on very, very different movies than this.
Yes.
And so they were very willing to take a back seat and let me torture and hold the reins for most of this.
But they also understand, they know the island and they know the lighting, because lighting is so important in this film.
Yeah, the
Damien.
Lighting was me, and I was so, so thrilled to get to do that. You know, George did my short film with me, and so he knew that I am a psychopath about light, and, you know, every single pixel of every single shot. You know, I made a rule right at the top that no natural sunlight was allowed to touch anyone for the entire film, and I stuck to it, except one scene where I wanted it to look a little grittier. And so George knew from working with me on the shore that even when we were the most time constrained we could possibly be, I was going to torture everyone about the light. You know, we had beautiful scrims made. There was a golden reflector board that one of our gaffers sewed by hand out of like gold leaf reflection.
Oh my God.
And you can see it. I really do think, because, you know, when you're shooting on 4K and everything's so intense and so harsh, you've got to counteract it. You know, George, I tracked down these phenomenal lenses, the lenses they use in Atonement, and he hand-carried them out. And it was, you know, we stuck a pair of stockings, like, you know, like lady tights, over the lens for a lot to give them this sort of hazy feel. And you know, that was an amazing process.
I was just going to ask you that, because it very much has the effect of looking like the Greta Garbo gauze effect of the 1930s. And that's exactly how you achieved it. Stockings were put over the lens.
Well, thank you so much. That's very, very, very kind. But it was a tricky thing to do, because I think, you know, when you're trying to make something in no time and in somewhere where the light is really lethally harsh, look like an expensive, beautiful, it's a real challenge. But I think we pulled it off, and I'm so pleased. And thank you for noticing.
You definitely did, especially on the beach scenes. It's really softer, because I've seen these other films of Philippe's that were shot in St. Kitts and Nevis. So I know how bright that light can be. And to see the softness.
It can be tricky. And I think, you know, when you're doing a gritty thriller, it's fine. But for us, it definitely wasn't. So I'm really glad that we managed to get away from that.
Oh, you did a beautiful, beautiful job with that. Now, I'm curious, did you and George, did you sit down and shot list? Did you storyboard?
I did. You know, George and I love George. He's one of my favorite people ever. We have slightly different approaches to working. I think George has been doing it for so much longer than me and has so much more experience than me that he's much more likely to find a beautiful shot on the day. I am a psychotic perfectionist, and I just can't. My nerves couldn't take it, especially with the time. So I storyboarded to within an inch of its life every single shot. I came to set every day. And not only did I storyboard, I then had a bullet point on my little notes, a bullet point of each shot. So there was no question at all. And with a written by Depp in there, I'm afraid I was perhaps the eyeballs. Because you have to be, you know, you don't have the luxury of experimenting. Because if you mess up, you've lost the time.
So you need to be prepared. But you also, did you have any, you know, you got plan A. Did you have any, like, plan B contingencies in the event something would not work?
Well, we knew we didn't have time or budget for reshoots. That we knew for sure. going into it. No, I to be honest, no. I mean, you can't afford to. I think there was one day right at the end where we knew that if we desperately needed to, George and I could have stayed behind later than everyone else and got some shots of the island, but mm-hmm. there was no question of having the cast for any of the extra days.
Mm-hmm. Now, picking the specific locations on the island, I am guessing you went along and you did that yourself?
The scout?
Yes.
Every single frame.
I am not surprised.
Yeah, I did. You know what? Some people hate being a perfectionist or a control freak. I kind of love it. In fact, I relish it. I did. I had a fabulous occasion manager on this who was local to the island, who'd grown up there his whole life. And that really helped. You know, also, I had spent a lot of time on the island myself. You know, I had made my short film there.
Mm-hmm.
And so I knew, you know, I wrote the film with that in mind, knowing the island's strengths and its weaknesses, because I really wanted it to be a sort of character in itself, you know? And I feel that's what we have. But no, all of it was scouted painstakingly by hand.
Where did you even get the idea for this film, Damien? This is not the kind of film.
I came up with the idea when I was 17 after I lost a very close friend to suicide. And it was, you know, it was a devastating time. It was the first loss that me and many of my friends had ever known. And I was really startled at the time, I remember, by seeing some of my friends just totally refused to accept what had happened. They went into this really weird mode where they just refused to accept it. And I could sympathize, but I couldn't understand it until a year later, my father took his own life, and suddenly I understood those select few all too well, just a total refusal. So really, I pulled on that when I was writing the character of Mia a lot. Mm. And, you know, it's Mia's refusal to accept that it's happened and burning knowledge that something's totally wrong that sets this whole story into motion.
Mm-hmm. Because it is so effective, and the dialogue, the emotion is so authentic.
Thank you so much.
I knew it had to have come from something personal. You can't pull something like this out of a hat, especially for the youthful tone that it takes. This is a film that it's written and directed by a young man, and it's youthful. It's, you know, in their early 20s. And they're dealing with, or not dealing with, life in your 20s, where you're drinking, where you're partying, where you're having fun. You're not dealing with the idea of a friend who's dead. And it's a refreshing take, Damien. And it's so believable and resonant.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
I
really
commend you for being brave enough to tell the story from that perspective.
Oh, God, well, thank you. You're the kindest person alive. I hope every single person who watches it responds as well as you have, because this is just music to my ears. I think, you know, when you put something out into the world creatively, all you can pray for is that people love it as much as you do.
Did you have any kind of trepidation going is setting everything in motion in the script the way you did, because you have multiple indiscretions happening here, shall we say?
No, I didn't. I think, you know, all of them are very important to the story. You know, I can't stand gratuitous anything. You know, I mean, there's no nudity in the film.
Right.
Because it wasn't needed. I think nudity has a time and a place in cinema, for sure. It wasn't in this. But it doesn't stop incredibly sexy scenes have taken place.
Right.
And I think, you know, you get to the end and you suddenly actually realize that everyone stayed fully clothed. But, no, it's an interesting... It's an interesting one. No, I didn't. And I have to say, you know, I knew all of the cast so well by the time we shot any of those scenes. And everyone, you know, really came together. We call each other our Strictly family because
aww,
we all worked at such intensity and such high stakes with so little time that you just, you become very close, you know. It's like trauma bonding. You've got to get through it. The intensity of the whole shoot. And you all become really close. And so everyone, by the time those scenes, it was just another scene.
Mm. Now, you know, something that you did throughout the film that really was a nice touchstone is your transition shots. You went to ocean scenes, either nighttime or daytime. We'd have a beautiful vista of the ocean.
Oh, thank you so much.
And that consistency of using the ocean as your transition, such as if the tide might be coming in, the tide might be going out, sun is rising, sun is setting. That
well,
was a great focus
point. That's so kind of you to say. I mean, I call them breathers, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I think after intense scenes, if you slam into another intense scene,
yeah,
no one has
need
a chance
something.
To catch their breath. And so I think it's nice to give a little break.
Yeah, they worked beautifully. And they were nice little breathers. I always call them transition shots because some people get offended if you say... It's a breather. No, no, no.
Well,
it
yeah,
keeps going. And it's like, okay.
Yeah. Look, it's you've been so kind that it's actually impossible to offend me at this point. no, I, to be honest, I get the negative connotations of transition shots, but they are transition shots. You know, they are.
Yeah.
They take you from scene to scene and transition. It's the same. You know, people have a really big, in theater, they go, ooh, you should never do a blackout. I love blackouts. I think they're a really nice full stop between scenes.
Yeah, and it makes the it gives the audience time to think and process what they've just seen.
I think so, too. You know, film and theater and all entertainment, I fully believe, is meant to be an immersive experience. I think we have so much media thrust at us from every possible corner, whether it's Instagram, whether it's YouTube, whether it's something online just flashing at us for seconds. For your attention to be caught by something on a streamer, the biggest dream is that you watch something that makes people put their phones down and watch and become a part of it and sink into a world for 92 minutes. You know, also, it's not that long, and that's what I really love about this film, is that I kept it quite short. And
you
I think
did.
A lot of first-time directors are really precious over what they shoot and are desperate to keep as much as possible. I was the opposite. I like it short, sharp, sexy, and out, and everyone can finish and talk about the film, not wish it had been 30 minutes shorter.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I was amazed at how quickly the time went by. I was...
Well, thank you. Well, that is something I've heard back from people, which I think is so nice. I think it would be so disheartening if everyone was sitting there thinking, when's this going to end?
Yeah, no, if I've got to look at my watch, then we got a problem.
Awful.
Before I knew it, it was over. And
thank you.
And I have to tell you, Damien, the reveals that you give us, the twists and turns, and we get one reveal, and then you're like gobsmacked. And then here comes another one. but I have to say, your ultimate reveal, which we're not revealing, just melted.
Did you see it coming?
I suspected maybe, but you really kept it on the down low. So there was nothing that really made it jump at me.
Well, see, that's what I was desperate to do. I think
when
one writes something that, you know, I mean, this so isn't a thriller, but it has thriller elements. And I think when one writes something which has twists and turns, obviously your biggest fear is people seeing it coming. But it's quite nice when people get a little sense of, surely that couldn't happen, surely that would be too absurd. Because then they've seen it coming. You know, if something's a total shock and reveal, by the time the story's going on, one's still five steps behind. So I'm really glad at the balance that
you
had with all the various little twists.
You did an excellent job with that. So much so that I want a sequel to see where these characters go now.
Oh, can you imagine? Well, unfortunately, I didn't think they could stay in Nevis. I think, you know, Nevis is a beautiful, beautiful place. But I feel if I were ever to come back to these characters, I'd want to put them all together
somewhere else,
totally different.
But now I would be remiss not to ask you about one of the most beautiful elements of this film. That is Michael Richard Plowman's score. The score
isn't he a phenomenal man?
Your use of piano as the predominant man.
Oh. He did my first short, my first professional short, the MSR one. I was introduced to him then, and he did that as a favor, which was just beyond kind. And I just fell in love with his music, and he's so collaborative, so wonderful. Again, you know, I'm so meticulous and annoying about shots and about where various notes come in and about various whatever, and he doesn't have any of the unhelpful preventative pride that can stop good working relationships. He's so open and so willing to collaborate and so generous with his time, with his expertise. You know, he's so good.
Mm-hmm.
And I could write love letters about Michael's music every day. He did such a wonderful job. And also, you know, there's a song, that song came into the public domain while we were shooting, which was so exciting, called Why Don't You Do Right? It's an old song, you know, mm-hmm. everyone knows it. And we did a really sexy cover of that with a wonderful singer. And that Michael was so, because again, everyone who does covers of that song is really insistent that it's got to be with piano and jazz, and I was so aggressively against, this is so boring, sorry, I was aggressively against that and was desperate for it to be a guitar, and everyone in the world would try to overrule me and try to do that, and Michael's like, okay, let's try it, and it was great, and it was so good.
Well, and this is another example of juxtaposition, because you have the guitar for that song, but then so much of the score itself is piano. And
yeah, it is. And I think, you know, Natasha's character,
yes.
Who, this isn't a spoiler, everyone knows this now, plays my mother's lover. Natasha, a big thing of hers is this quite sexy, dark, dangerous guitar that comes in.
Mm-hmm.
And for almost all of her intense scenes, that same guitar just sneaks its little way back in.
Yep. No, the instrumentation itself is really, really inserted perfectly. I mean, the melodies themselves that Michael has written for you, but then the instrumentation that comes in and is used, that makes all the difference in the world, Damien. And I really hope that in your future films that I see and hear this same kind of instrumentation and usage of it, because that adds another whole layer to your storytelling.
Well, you're just very kind. Thank you. Yes, I think so too. And I think it's really, you know, it's hard because one never wants to succumb to melodrama and blast too much music throughout, but also one doesn't want to underscore. So I hope you got it right.
No, I think you did. You just did an amazing job on this film, Damien. It does not look...
Well, thank you so much. Really, I can't thank you enough.
It does not look like or feel like the film of a first-time director. This looks like the film coming from a seasoned director who has multiple films under his belt. So...
I feel like I'm on a monotone because I'm just going to keep saying thank you, but I mean it, that you're very, very kind.
No, well, here's the truth, Damien. If I thought the film was bad, I would be the first one to tell you how you could have corrected the badness.
Yes.
So, no, when I tell you it's good and break down all the elements for you, I mean it sincerely. Structurally and with the finished product, all the pieces, the puzzle fits together. Just beautiful job, Damien. I can't wait to see your next film.
Oh, God, I can't wait to make it. Thank you so much. Hopefully you'll have me back to talk about it next time.
Anytime. Now, before I let you go, where can everybody see Strictly Confidential?
Okay, so in the U.S. and Latin America, everyone can see Strictly on almost every online digital platform, on Amazon Prime, on Apple TV, on Fandango at Home, on Google Play, on YouTube. It's everywhere. And I really hope every single person listening would like to go and see it. It made me incredibly happy.
I think everyone should see it, if for no other reason. Number one, your mother is in it, and she still looks absolutely fantastic. And shot on St. Kitts and Nevis, which I love, love, love. Philippe's invited. He's telling me I have to come down there as his guest. I have to come down during a shoot. One day I'm going to get there. But just watch the island. It will take you away from every problem you have. Those are two, even if they're not interested in the plot of the film, those are two great reasons to see this film, Damien.
But absolutely, and we hope they'll like this one too.
Yes.
But yes, no, absolutely. Yeah.
Damien, I can't thank you enough. This has been such a joy to have you on the show today.
Thank you for having me and for being so kind. And I hope I'll pass across again soon.
I hope so. And you have a wonderful rest of your day.
You too. Bye. Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
And that was Damien Hurley, writer-director of Strictly Confidential. Theaters, VOD, digital, all the usual suspects. See it. It really is. It's a beautiful, beautiful film. He has done a great job. And that is all the time we have today. We ran a little bit over, but Pam will now be able to run out and take a look at the last few glimpses of the eclipse that's happening right now in the LA area. So until next week, hopefully, next week is TCM Film Festival and the NAB Convention. So I'm going to be running between states next week. But until next week, I'm Debbie Elias. This is Behind the Lens.